Daily Traditionalist on Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Traditionalist. Today's date is the 1st of November 2017. I believe it's All Saints Day. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and I'm joined today by the Witchfinder General of the Mysterious Fascists, Mr. Florian Geyer. Florian, how are you doing today?
I'm very well. I don't know if I'm Witchfinder General, but that's perhaps a position to aspire to.
Definitely a hammer of the witches. Definitely the hammer of the modern day witches, I think, with Mysterium Fasces. You certainly know how to put people right, I think, on the right course, correcting the course. And that's something we're going to talk a little bit about later, the importance of sticking to the truth and not compromising. But I've just got a bit of sad news that we need to start with today, I think. A personal friend of mine and a well-known nationalist, Paul Hickman, is no longer with us. He used to run the Birmingham Nationalist blog site. He also did a podcast called The Voice of Albion, which I believe it went out on the White Network, and then it was with Renegade Broadcasting. He got into Russia Today, and he was very, very pro-white, and he was quite proud to put his face out there. And basically, because of that, he got hounded by the Antifa, he got arrested, and he got put on really restrictive bail conditions. And for the last 2 years, he really hasn't been able to do anything involved with nationalism. He's kept a very low profile. He ended up losing a couple of jobs because of being a nationalist. Basically, the Antifa would go and report him to his boss. And the guy was a carer. He was caring for disabled people. That was a job he really wanted to do. And he ended up losing that job because of leftists. And as I say, he ended up with these restrictive bail conditions. And I got told today that he ended his life, which I find to be very sad. And I think it probably was due to these restrictive bail conditionings and the way that he was treated by the left, constantly trying to expose the guy. I mean, he was a really, really decent chap. I went abroad with him. I met East European nationalists with him. He was really dedicated to the cause. He brought a lot of these Eastern nationalist groups, or the Baltic nationalist groups and Eastern European groups, to people's attention. He went through the Stormfront Forum and found their names out, contacted them, did a fantastic series called The Voice of Albion. And we've got them at the Radio Aryan Bootlegs archive, and I'll probably find some way of giving access to them again, because he ended up scrubbing the internet of everything that he had done. Because he wanted to be able to get a job, basically. Basically just saying how hard it is to be a nationalist in these times and stick to the truth. So I wanted to say that. I'm sure there's a lot of our listeners know who Paul was. He was also in the BNP. He was in the National Front. I believe he actually stood for the BNP at one point. And he'd been a nationalist ever since he was at school. He was in his mid-30s now. There's actually an interview with him, I hope it's still online, where he actually talked about his life. I'm not sure who it was that was interviewing him. It might have been Jimmy Marr. I might be wrong on that. But anyway, God have mercy on Paul Hickman. And I shall just definitely be having a drink to him tonight. And hopefully we'll find out where the funeral is. And if anyone wants to contact me, if they know where that is, or they want to know where that is, then maybe we can arrange for us to meet up there and do something in honour of him. Anyway, well, now that's out of the way, Florian, maybe we should move on to this subject about not compromising on the truth, something I believe you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely, Sven. You know, and God have mercy on our comrade soul. I'll make a quick comment before we continue. It's just that when you fight for the truth, when you oppose enemies forcefully, and the truth is the most powerful sword, they attack you. And it's a very, very difficult position for many of us to be in, because we have eyes to see the filth of the world around us, because we love the truth and we understand that we're living in a world that's so far from it, that it is an incredible weight to bear upon the soul. And I think that everybody who's been involved in nationalist politics understands this feeling, or even not even people who are involved in nationalism, people who just want something better out of life than this filth. And so I would, every time at the beginning of Mysterium Fasces recently, I've always talked about spiritual warfare, because I think that that is the, you can see here that this is what it's all about, and the importance of keeping your spirit victorious, of keeping it high, of keeping it alive. Because without the spirit of life and truth, we have nothing. It's just death.
Well, I know he was prepared to die for nationalism, but I didn't think he would end up going this way. I mean, he was really dedicated to it and dedicated to getting the message out there, and he was willing to take these risks, and he put his face out there, and he was hounded by the left for doing this. He knew that he might end up going to prison. He knew all these terrible things that might happen to him, but he was still prepared to stand up for white people and to stand up particularly for the British people, because he knew that was the right thing to do. You know, he wasn't a Christian, but he was looking for the truth and holding to the truth and loving his neighbor, which is what we're told to do as Christians. And that's what nationalism is. It's loving your neighbor as yourself. It means loving your nation, loving your race, loving your people, putting their needs first, the same as you put the needs of your family first, and you look out for them. And he certainly did that. You know, I knew that I could rely on him. I got in touch with him when he was doing his Birmingham Nationalist blog and just left comments for him. And he phoned me up and checked me out and introduced me to people. And that was really how I sort of met up with the offline nationalism scene in Britain. He was a really good guy, and he will definitely be missed. As you say, he held to the truth. That's what gave him the inspiration to do what he did and to fight against the powers that be that are basically trying to destroy us, trying to genocide us. And the one thing he never did was compromise. He really did never compromise. He would say it, tell it exactly how it was in his blog and exactly in his podcasts. And he would call a spade, and he would call out the Jews, and he would say, I'm openly supportive of National Socialism. Adolf Hitler was right. I mean, right from the very start, he never compromised on those things, because he knew that he was going to get called all those names anyway. This is just it, isn't it, Florian? We get called all these names anyway. And if we are still speaking the truth, at least we can hold to that. You know, if we get attacked, at least we know we're in the right. If these political prisoners that are in the prison cells at the moment, they're quite happy to be there because they know that they are in the right. And in the end, that is all that matters. When you think of these Christian martyrs that were tortured and put to death, they knew that they were in the right. They went to their deaths smiling because they knew that they were holding to the truth, and they were being persecuted for the truth. And they knew that they would be rewarded for that.
Blessed are they who are persecuted for the sake of righteousness. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for your reward in heaven is great. And so, yeah, that's absolutely it. And that's a good transition into our topic for today, which is on both, I think, the subject of Jesus Christ and National Socialism at large. What I wanted to discuss was the fact that Christianity is not respectable. Christianity is not respectable. It's not good optics. It never has been. The cross is the ultimate bad optics. This is the whole point of the religion. It's a crucified man, God. God was not crucified in a church next to two candles with an Anglican choir and, you know, wearing white lace. He was crucified, scourged like a rebel and a criminal, naked, next to two bandits. To the world, Christ is scum. Okay, so if you love the world, if you want to appeal to the world, Christ is not for you. But if you care about the truth, if you want to appeal to the truth, and if you want to grasp that and make it part of who you are and gain transcendence by being a servant of the truth, then Christianity is for you.
I think,
and this is it precisely, is that what I've seen so much in this last week and just in general is people are trying to appeal to the world. They're trying to be respectable in the eyes of the world. They're trying to take truth and put it in a package that is flashy and nice and smelly and is going to make everybody feel good about their message. Well, sorry, boys, that's not how it works. The world hates the truth. The world thinks the truth is falsehood. The world thinks the truth is iniquity. To the world, the truth is anathema. And there's no way, no branding, no clever marketing techniques, no sneaky tactics that you can use to institutionalize the truth of National Socialism or even just straight racist liberalism in the Western world. You can't outsneak the Jews. What you can do is you can tell the truth. And that's one thing that the Jews will never do, is they will never tell the truth, not the whole truth. And that is our greatest weapon, is that we are correct, that National Socialism is an organic ideology. It stems from these very Christian principles and values, which are true from the foundation of the universe. That's why it's effective. That's why I'm a Christian and a National Socialist, because I believe that they're true. Nothing but that. And so to these people who really think that by putting on, you know, boat shoes and khakis, right, and wearing a tie, right, and, you know, when you're doing street action, that if you think that that is going to make the truth palatable to a demon, you're fooling yourself. You're an idiot.
Well, I think, I think when people are out demonstrating, then they need to wear practical clothing for a start. But just to go back to what you were saying about the truth and the lies. I mean, the world that we live in is a world full of lies. When you finally find out the truth, I mean, it's shocking. I can remember being in tears, realizing just how opposite the truth is to the way that the world is. Thinking about all the miscegenated offspring that are out there and thinking of the way that that is promoted and thinking of the truth of that, about how that's going directly against creation, how the promotion of homosexuality is put out there about, oh, it's just people that love one another, and if you're nasty to them, they might kill themselves and we have to feel sorry for them. And you realize that what they're actually doing to one another is a total inversion of creation. Once again, it's all anti-creation. It's anti everything that God has given us. The modern world is against it. So if you stand for the truth and if you stand for traditional Christianity, then you stand against that world, and the world is going to hate you for it. And the New Testament tells us that we should be dead to the world. And in fact, that's a very orthodox phrase, I believe, death to the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's two things here. I mean, one is that, yeah, I mean, with street protest, that's another matter. I mean, yeah, practicality is the critical thing. And that's a question for another day. But the thing is, there's two critical things here that you touched on, Sven. One, I want to talk about the boomer mindset, and two, I want to talk about the victory of the cross. So the thing about the boomer mindset, which we could also call the optics cup mindset, and the cardinal sin of the baby boomer generation, is that they totally made peace with the world. And in fact, they love the world. They've invited the world into the deepest parts of their soul. They exist for the world. For them, there's nothing but living a respectable, honored life in bourgeois comfort. Anything, including sacrificing the future of their own children and all of their welfare, is good as long as it sustains this world for them, right? I mean, in the right chanted in time of attack by aliens, we ask God to have mercy upon the generation of our fathers who have signed themselves over to the devil and rebuked the piety of their ancestors. That's the situation that we're dealing with. And so, The thing that I've noticed is that this kind of like baby boomer like respectability mindset has you know seeped into the far right, which is blows me away. I don't want to be respectable. I don't want to be respectable in the eyes of the world. You know, our Lord says that if you want, you cannot serve two masters. So if you want to be respectable, fine, but you can't serve the truth. Because if you tell the truth, they're going to make you like a piece of shit anyway, excuse me for cursing, that that's the way the world is going to look at you, as filth, as a discarded rag, as excrement. Because the truth to them is worth about that much. And that's why Christ says that we should be dead to them, because to those who love the truth, falsehood is worth that much. And precisely, Sven, you said death to the world. Well, people should understand when we say the world, we don't mean the physical creation. By the world, we mean the affairs of men, right? And the slipstream of daily life, of these distractions and passions and death-bearing tendencies that draw us further away from the truth and from God. Now, of course, all of those can be used for good. And this is precisely what the cross has done. The cross has taken death, which was the ultimate curse, the ultimate fear, the chain which bound us and forced us to compromise on the truth for the sake of world and glory. And it has made death life. And so a Christian rejoices in death. He looks forward to death because death for him is life. When he passes into death, he passes into life greater than anything we could know in this earth. Christ has conquered death, and he's used it as a tool. He's inverted it to serve the glory of God.
That says to be thankful that those who have died didn't live to see the evil that was to come. And the world does continually get more and more evil and more wicked. If you're seeking to please that, then you're going along with that. I think it's far better to stand up against it and be known for standing against it. And then the good people will support you. And I think that's more important than having bad people supporting you, people that you can't trust, people that you're trying to please, that it's not going to help you out in the long run. And it's like saying that you know better than God. If you put your faith in God and you stand for the truth, then you know that you will be helped. Or if you see it as you haven't been helped, then perhaps you're not looking at things in the right way. Because you got to look at things overall as if things are overall going to be turning out better. But if you think you know better than God and you go against his commandments and you pretend that you're not following the truth and you go along with, accepting homosexuality or accepting race mixing or accepting Jews, then in my experience, things will go badly for you. Things will go wrong for you. If you put your faith in Christ and in the truth, and if you stick to the truth, then you know your life seems to go on a better path. That's just from my own personal experience of it, of going down two paths in my life, and now I will try to stick to the truth and speak in the truth. And this is the same as what Adolf Hitler said. He said if the Jews aren't angry at you that day, then you're not doing it right, or words to that effect, I believe.
Precisely. Christ says directly, seek first the kingdom of heaven and its righteousness, and all good things will come to you. You know, so that is, I mean, the calling of a Christian. This is something important to understand, is that the orthodox view of the kingdom of heaven is that when Christ says, behold, the kingdom of heaven is at hand, he means it. He means that when he gave the Beatitudes, the doors of heaven had been opened and we can enter in right now. And so heaven circumsects the earth. The church is heaven on earth. And so by entering into the church, by being baptized, you enter into the gates of heaven. And the latter, the struggle on earth is to continue to enter further and further into the doors, up the ladder to the sky, right? And that's done through asceticism, through struggle, through discipline is literally what that means. Asceticism is what monks and athletes both do. It's what soldiers do. Is they prepare themselves for battle. They prepare themselves for their destination. And so that is the life of a Christian. It's also the life of a National Socialist, is struggle, asceticism, labor. And it's not life-denying labor. People have such a twisted concept of asceticism and self-denial. You don't deny yourself because you hate life, because you hate the good things and the bounty that it offers. But precisely, you deny yourself so that you can use those things to their fullest and that they can give you the most life. I mean, if you drink a bottle of whiskey every night, it means nothing when you drink it on Easter. It's just simple, right? I mean, if you feast every day, well, Christmas turkey means nothing. It's very simple, right? And so it's, you mean, if you
if you don't go to the gym because you don't like feeling shitty, but you get sick and die, excuse me for cursing again, then you get sick and die, you know, you've not benefited yourself anything. That's precisely why struggle and life go hand in hand. I mean, every cell in our body right now struggles against the death in the atmosphere, which seeks to break it down. And when the spirit of life flees us, we decompose, we disintegrate. And so precisely the kingdom of heaven and its obtaining happens here on the earth. We take it by violence, the church fathers say, by struggle, by force. We storm it by our efforts. Now, of course, these efforts are in providence. And this is the critical thing, is that when you become a son of God, when you enter into the kingdom of heaven, you move away from the chaos of the world. The prince of the world and his chaotic anti-logos, right, his disorder has no more hold over you, but rather the prince of heaven, the prince of peace or of order. Peace of heart is harmony. It's not cessation of violence. And so when you enter into God and enter into providence, you're not bound by the chaos and flux of this world, but by the order and providence of God Almighty. And so that's why, by telling the truth and by serving God, all these other good things can come to you.
I think the way that we're surrounded by materialism and we have so much abundance around us, and that's one of the reasons why we're so weak as a race, is because we're just spoiled. We have everything at our fingertips. And even those of us who say, oh, it's terrible, life is terrible, you've still got a roof over your head, you've still got food, you've still got heat, you've still got television, still got the internet. You know, we've got all these things around us, these great riches around us, and it ends up spoiling us. And we don't appreciate the good things in life. And if you go without these things, like you were saying about asceticism there, then it really does mean something. Just when you have a good meal, if it's something you haven't eaten for a long time, it tastes good. And it tells you in the Old Testament that the only real pleasures there are is doing a hard day's work and coming home and feeling contented with the work that you've done and eating a good meal. Everything else is just materialism. It's just thinking, oh, I need something. I need this. I've been told that I must have the latest iPhone. I must have this flash car. I must have these flashy clothes. Once you've got them, you just move on to something else and you want something else, and you're in a constant state of wanting things which you can't have. And when you finally get them, that's it. It's gone. In fact, the actually looking forward to getting these things can be more pleasurable than when you actually get them. And it's because it's all meaningless. All these material things are meaningless. What's important is improving your soul and your spirit and your character. And what is character building is struggle. That's why Hitler's book is called My Struggle, because it's all about building the character, building the individual character, building the character of the nation. And all of this is essential to Christianity, but real Christianity, not the Christianity that you see pushed in the establishment churches. National Socialism was the political growth of real Christianity. It was like the political side of it is the way that I see it, Florin.
I agree with you 100%. I mean, that's why you can look at the Old Testament political system and order, and there's almost virtually no differences to a National Socialist philosophical ethos. I mean, in the book of Joshua, when they enter into Canaan and conquer it and cleanse the Canaanites there, they divide the land socially. You know, it's not, you know, an auction. It's not a market. It's not, you know, anything like this. They give it fairly and equally to the tribes of Israel based on, you know, their size and their skill and what makes the most sense. And so it's written all over the place. It's written all over the place. I mean, socialism, you cannot serve both God and mammon. You know, and so this is the thing, the reason why Father Johnson says this all the time, and it's absolutely correct. The reason why Christ didn't say a lot on politics and governance is because he didn't have to. It was all said by the prophets that came before him. They said everything you needed to say. But nobody reads the Old Testament. Nobody takes it seriously. You know, they're all caught in this semi-Marcion Gnosticism, you know. And so precisely they don't worship the one God, because that's it, right? God is not a philosophical concept. He's not actus purus, as Thomas Aquinas says. That statement, I am who I am, what he says to Moses, that's not he's saying he's the God of the philosophers. That's saying he is a personal God, a living God, a real God, You don't abstractly worship somebody who's living and real and personal. You personally and concretely enter into a relationship with them. And now relationship is not some, you know, kind of gay, you know, Pentecostal touchy-feely stuff. I mean, it's like the relationship you have with, you know, like a king and father. Right now, of course, there is tight, huge intimacy. I mean, the Holy Eucharist is the most, you know, you become more intimate with Christ in the reception of the Eucharist than with your parents. Christ, his body and blood, his flesh and soul, is assimilated into every cell of your body when you receive the Eucharist. So it's the most personal thing, right? But at the same time, we must understand, you know, that you can't worship God in the abstract. You can't worship a set of ideas. You can only worship an entity, a person, the Lord Jesus Christ, one in essence with the Father and the Spirit.
Well, people aren't prepared to fight and die just for ideas, are they? They're not prepared to fight and die for ideas like democracy or capitalism. They're prepared to fight and die for God. I mean, this is what the Crusades was about. This is what even the Muslims who are following a false God, they're prepared to die. So you imagine how much stronger we would be if we had faith in the real God, in the true God. If you compare the strength that the Muslims have, who are worshipping an idol, to what we would have. I think that we've got evidence there, and we can also look back in history at the great things that were achieved when we had faith in the one true God, and our civilization was built, Christendom was built, and as soon as we started thinking that truth was relevant or relative to what's going on, and that good and evil were relative to what's going on, as soon as we had this idea of moral relativism and we thought that we knew better than God and that these old laws could be superseded, everything's gone downhill. Everything's gone downhill so badly that we're now being replaced in our own homelands by godless savages.
Well, that's it precisely. And this is the great, I mean, this thing, here's a great thing about natural law, is the laws are in the consequences. So like natural law is when you trip and hit your head. Yeah, that's the law of nature there, right? Gravity making itself known in the consequences that you've broken its laws, right? And so the fact that our nations are disintegrating and being overwhelmed by foreign aliens, right, is teaching us its instruction in natural law by its punishment. And so, quite direct, as you say, I mean, these Muslims, well, yeah, they worship falsehood. You know, they have a false prophetic religion and all this. But they're more alive than the vast majority of people in the West are. You know, they're more truthful. Their worldview is more accurate, even though it's, you know, fundamentally false, than most people in the West. You know, that's it. They're stronger. That's why they're conquering us. And so if we want to survive, if we want to continue to exist, we have to repent or die. That's it.
I think when you say the consequences are part of the action there, I think that's like a cosmic law. We have man's law where we punish people and we try to achieve a sense of justice, but there's also cosmic law and natural law, and I think that's where the ideas of karma come from. And if you live by the sword, you'll die by the sword. If you thieve off people, you will be thieved off. If you deceive people, you won't be able to trust people. These actions that we take, it's not like they don't affect anybody else or they don't affect us. They do affect everybody else and they will continue to affect us. The decisions we make, if we lie and we don't hold to the truth, we will be lied to and we will become liars and all the effects that has upon us. This comes down to the building of the character and the fact that it will improve your life. You may get persecuted, but at the same time, you'll be improving your character by holding to the truth and holding to nationalism.
And that's it exactly. That's it exactly. And I mean, more and more, as time goes on, and I'll say this because I know we're coming to the end of the time here, is that I don't think with a lot of people engaging in intellectual arguments is even good because they're not open to hear them. Their hearts are hard and closed. And so, I mean, when you're dealing with somebody who's in bad faith, I mean, I think it's much more effective just to point out like, okay, well, your ideas are gay. What I mean by that is that they're inverted and feminine. I mean, prima facie, you just say, just point it out to them. You know, if they were, if they're a man with a little bit of fire left in their belly, just point, yeah, well, you're gay. I mean, your ideas are gay. If you believe in these ideas, right? I mean, you're just effeminate and weak. Appeal to their emotion, because they don't care about the truth intellectually. You might as well just point out to them, you know, how gay they are. And I mean, that, I would say it's more effective than arguing with them.
I think you've got a good point there. I mean, if people aren't prepared to debate in good faith, if you're going to give them facts one day and show them something, and then the next day you find them and they're still arguing the same point, even though they've been shown that there is that's not actually the truth, then what is the point in even debating with them in the first place? And again, this is a Jewish way of doing things. Hitler wrote about it, how he would defeat the Jews in a debate one day, and the next day they would be saying the same thing again. They would be repeating it as if they'd never heard the other side of the argument. And we do come across that in nationalism. I come across it in nationalism, in debating with people, especially with people that are anti-Christian. You know, they're not arguing in good faith. And if you're not arguing in good faith, you're not placing that that value on the truth and logic, and you're just thinking about emotion. Well, that is feminine. Emotion rather than logic. Florian, thank you very much for coming on today. I know it's been a bit of a sad podcast at the beginning, but I've enjoyed this discussion of the truth, and hopefully our listeners will find it edifying. Matthew Heimbach should be back tomorrow. If he's not, you will have me and Dr. Johnson. So until then, I will say hail victory.
You've been listening to The Daily Traditionalist on Radio Arian.